Hello and welcome to All About the Brahmakumaris. My name is Magla Pillay. I'm a judicial officer from South Africa, and we have here in the studio today with me Sister Denise, who has been practicing under the Brahmakumaris for the past 40 years. She was actually the first person to take up a BK lifestyle in the West over 40 years ago. And today we're going to look at the subject of a cult. The name cult has over the years developed an extremely negative connotation because of various groups and organizations that have been called cults, and because of the damage that they cause to its members and society as a whole. And so we're going to look at the Brahmakumaris in the context of being a cult, and we're going to ask an experienced meditator as to her opinions on the subject. Thank you, Sister Denise. Welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
First question I have for you is that I need to get this properly because it's quite a mouthful. The Vatican calls the Brahmakumaris a non-Christian, apocalyptic, harmless cult. What does that mean?
The Vatican is, of course, the headquarters of the Roman Catholic Church, and they have, like many institutions in the world, they have their files, their archives on all the other different gatherings of people within the church, within the Catholic Church, outside the Catholic Church, and they have created this set of categories. And within that, the Brahmakumaris have been described and defined as non-Christian, which we're non-Christian. Apocalyptic means, and there are many, the Christianity is apocalyptic, Islam is apocalyptic, Judaism is apocalyptic, Buddhism is non-apocalyptic, Sikhism is not apocalyptic, Hinduism, some parts of it are, some parts of it aren't, because it covers an extremely broad spectrum. So apocalyptic means that at a certain point in time, the world as we know it no longer continues in that way, and there is a complete renovation. And so those religions that also talk about God as the creator, the ones that are theistic, they also tend to be apocalyptic. Whereas the religions that are non-theistic, they tend not to be apocalyptic. Harmless means that there's unlikely, very unlikely to be any negative activity that damages people individually or collectively in connection with the Brahmakumaris. There are some groups which have a mandate to do violence. Brahmakumaris definitely is on the side of non-violence, fraternity, inclusiveness. One of the things that happens with the word cult, and you sometimes get the word cult associated with cult figure. And so from time to time you get individuals who experience that they have been divinely inspired, and they gather around themselves a following. And this also happens with celebrities, football and other sports stars, pop singers and so on. So it happens when you are divinely inspired or in some other way inspired, and you are a very charismatic person, other people tend to feed off your energy. And likewise, the charismatic person tends to feed off the energy of the followers, and so you get a kind of loop of energy like this. And a point comes in the life of such a group from time to time, we've seen examples of this, where the charismatic leader sort of burns out, runs out of that energy, but the followers do not run out of the desire to nurture themselves from that energy. And so this creates a crisis point, and it's usually around that time that damage takes place. Now, in Brahma Kumaris, it's very interesting. We have the name Brahma Kumaris, which means the daughters of Brahma, and there are sons of Brahma as well, the Brahma Kumars, but the majority are women who have taken up this practice, this path. Now, we find that, of course, in our teachings, the teachings come from the being whom we call Shiv Baba, who is the incorporeal supreme being, and Brahma Baba is the corporeal medium. And so the way it works is the incorporeal is actually giving the teachings, and then Brahma is really demonstrating how these teachings should be applied in practical life, and then by extension the brothers and sisters, especially those who have been a long time in the practice, who are senior in the gathering in the community of Brahma Kumars and Kumaris, they are also those who demonstrate what this practice looks like embodied in a human being. So the one that we take energy from is actually the incorporeal. So we have to practice to detach from the consciousness of the body and become very aware and focused on the self as a soul, the center of the forehead, and in that state of consciousness, connect with the Supreme Soul, who is beyond the material world, draw light, power, love, and other qualities, and then disperse those. So it's a really very different situation where there's no question of taking energy from a single human being. Those who are the great yogis within the Brahma Kumaris tradition are very powerful beings in their own right, and there's many, you know, and some are less powerful, but anyone who regularly starts drawing on this light into themselves becomes in a way a conduit. And so that is accumulated over the years, and the idea is to be conduits so that this energy can be spread, so that people can receive it knowingly or unknowingly, that it's in the atmosphere, that it creates feelings of tranquility, serenity, and sustains people, especially when the general environmental energy is really bad. So this is a very different type of activity from what you generally find in small groups who are involved in different spiritual practices around a particular figure, a guru or a leader like this.
If the Brahma Kumaris as a community is so practices what you just said, why is there a sense of fear surrounding Brahma Kumaris? Fear, trepidation, you hear people say, be careful of the Brahma Kumaris. why is that?
You know, we are doing something very different to the conventional. And in many societies in the world are very conservative. So any time you have people who are clearly in their own power and who are doing something different, it makes people feel uncomfortable. There's a number of reasons, and I experienced this even in more liberal societies of Northern Europe. Once we start to practice the Raj Yoga, so we are encouraged to have a pure lifestyle, to be vegetarian, to live in simplicity, to be in our own power as a single individual. And what happens when you start doing that? Sometimes other people feel that you make them look bad, because they aren't doing that, and they know that it's good to do, but for some reason they feel, well, are you saying that we are bad? No, not at all. What we're saying is, this is good, so let's do it. And some people do it to a greater extent than others. There's a huge spectrum. The other thing is, I think that, you know, those of us who are in the uniform like myself, we look different. And as you know...
On that note.
Yes.
Why are you dressed in that fashion?
Why am I dressed in the white sari? The Brahma Kumaris, as you mentioned in your introduction earlier, they began in 1936-1937. And initially the gathering was of about 300 people, and they were living in Karachi, which is now in Pakistan. But this was before partition, so the whole thing was India at that time. And then after partition, in about 1951, the group moved to India. And pretty much the white clothing has always been part of the Brahma Kumaris, but this particular uniform for the women who are the teachers, a white sari with the white blouse with long sleeves, and, you know, is to do with modesty. The sari, normally you have the midriff is exposed, but we wear an undershirt so that it's covered. So part of the reason is modesty and simplicity, and because we give a lot of importance to purity, those of us who are the teachers and the serious students all are practicing celibacy, so white is the color of that. And when you're doing yoga and you're trying to reach beyond the material consciousness, you move into the subtle consciousness, the incorporeal consciousness, so the kind of the energies, the auras around that will be very, very white. And so this color of white corresponds to what we're doing, especially the question of purity. And the sari was decided upon by the group when we began to serve the community through lectures and so on. We had to decide what sort of look would we adopt, and so this was adopted in the 50s. Nowadays, since about the 80s, 90s and onwards, more and more people will dress more like you. Because it's a kind of in between. It's white, but it's not quite as austere as this, and so many people will do that.
I want to interrupt you there. Mr. Joe Bloggs is walking on the streets of Stuttgart in Germany, and he thinks, I want to meditate. And he knocks on the door of a meditation center, and he sees somebody dressed like that. And his first inclination is to go running for the hills.
It wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen because in Stuttgart, which is in Germany, after the Second World War, one of the things that was put into law is a prohibition of uniforms for anyone who is not in the military or the police and like that. And so the people in Brahma Kumaris don't wear the uniform in Germany.
Okay. Sao Paulo then?
Sao Paulo, yes. I have been walking like this down the streets of Sao Paulo.
Okay. My point is that there is somebody who's very interested in meditation. He is experiencing peacelessness, he's experiencing a lot of sorrow, trauma in the family, lost his job, comes to the Brahma Kumaris in order to meditate.
He
knocks on the door and sees you.
He will not see me. There are very few sisters who are in this dress.
Okay.
In India,
but should
yes.
Should he knock on a door?
Then I wouldn't be the one to answer it.
Denise.
It wouldn't happen.
Respect. Okay, but there are BKs who are dressed like that across the globe.
Very few.
Okay.
In India, pretty much everyone. But outside of India, the senior teachers who are in with an Indian background, they will wear this, and there may be about a dozen others who would wear this. Not more than that globally. One dozen.
Okay. So, on first impression, if one if a person walks into the center and sees somebody dressed like this?
It's unlikely. That's what I'm telling you. Out of the 1 dozen people in the world who are dressed like this outside of India, the likelihood of them meeting that person as the first point of contact is very rare. So they might see, if they come to a program and they might see someone dressed like this, which is a very acceptable ceremonial dress, it may not be something that you're likely to see going on down the street, but it is possible. But this is what I'm saying, the uniformed Brahma Kumari, especially outside of India, you will see very rarely. Most of the people will wear pastels. They will maintain a modest look. A lot of the women will wear pantsuits, or you will have a little bit midi-length dress. But the white sari is very rare.
Mm. One of the criticisms of Brahma Kumaris is that I want to meditate, but it looks like as if this community of people want to Indianize everybody, because the dress code is that of
saris. Well, what I'm saying is it isn't. You have your information wrong there.
Okay.
In the headquarters in Mount Abu in India,
yes,
where all the people are wearing that, if you're not wearing white, you're going to really stand out, and people don't feel like standing out to that extent. So they tend to wear the white in Mount Abu, or when they're in programs where it is appropriate. But the people from the West generally wear pastels.
Okay. If one goes to a meditation center across the globe, it is quite common to hear at the Brahma Kumaris center Hindi music being played, is it not?
You will, but you'll also hear Western music. It really depends on the dominant culture in that area. Say, for example, where you are from in South Africa, there are some centers where it's more Anglicized, and some centers where the sisters are more from India, so they will attract more of the Indian community where they are, like in Linasia, maybe in Durban, but probably in Johannesburg it's less so. And so according to the preference, cultural preference of the dominant community, you will hear those things. Mm. If you go to France or Germany or Sweden or Finland, you will hear it very rarely. So it really depends very much on the relationship of Brahma Kumaris with the Indian diaspora. Mm. So, for example, in many parts of the United States, there's a very large Indian diaspora, and they're very interested in Brahma Kumaris in the regular Indian way. When we move it to other parts where the dominant culture is more Caucasian or mixed, then you will get the kind of music, food, all of these things that correspond to the preference of those people, because it's only reasonable.
Is the Brahma Kumaris an Indian organization?
Brahma Kumaris definitely originates in India, and the teachings that we have are given in the Hindi language, which was the main language of India by law after partition. And of course there are 9 Indian languages that are official languages in India, so in those regions everything is translated into those languages, and then it's translated according to whichever other country, so the main one would be English. A lot of the people in the world understand English, but all of this is translated into Chinese, Japanese, Croatian, Finnish, Swedish, French, Italian, Spanish, every language, because we have people pretty much, in about 120 or 130 countries who are connected with Brahma Kumaris in a formal or an informal way, who are doing it in the context of a recognizable center, or who are just gathering in somebody's flat or house for, you know, a few hours, a few times a week. So there's a very broad variation of how it is, how it's done in different parts of the world, and more very much aligned with the preferences and tastes of the local community. But the origin is India, you see, and the headquarters where we are doing this recording in Mount Abu is in Rajasthan, so that's definitely the place. And people like it if you can, or if they can experience spirituality linked to their culture, what they know. And the same way in India, you know, most of the people who come are based in conventional Hinduism. So we have a lot of bridges between the Brahma Kumari's teachings and the conventional prayers and rituals, so that people can cross those bridges and see, yeah, this is how I was doing my, you know, my search for truth, my devotion, and then I cross this bridge and I begin to get the meaning of the things I was doing without understanding the meaning. It's really to do with that.
Again, for somebody who comes to the center for the first time, will probably now find out from a friend or a community member
usually
about Brahma Kumaris, and he or she will hear those people get up at 4 o'clock, get up at 4:15 in the morning.
Yes.
They have to be strict vegetarians. They, and one or two of them dress like
they
that.
Might not.
Okay.
What they
on
usually
hearing this,
do.
On hearing
they
this.
Don't usually hear that. What they usually hear, you will get peace. You will feel nice. It's not until a person really starts taking up the practice that they start to hear about this. Yes, if anyone hears about, yes, you wear white and you get up very early in the morning and you're a strict vegetarian, they may either be attracted by that or not. It depends on the individual. But I think that, you know, people who are spiritually inclined already anyway, and who are looking for a way to amplify that or to find out and get it articulated, when they hear these things, very often they'll say, yeah, now we like that. Why do I get up early in the morning? That is my quiet time. It's very quiet. That is a time where I know that there will not be any interruptions, and I will be able to enjoy my silence and have my meditation. If I want, I can sit for a couple of hours at that time, and that is my absorption. You see, and I do that because I like it, you see. And why would anybody do something if they don't like it? They wouldn't, you know. And it is this that gives you the foundation energy for the day. We are volunteers, and that goes all the way from you get up in the morning if you decide to. There isn't anybody who says you have to do this and you can't do that. Everything that a person does, they do because they decide to. So if you want to have friends, you have friends. If you want to have this friend and not that friend, that's what you do. It's a community. And what I feel is the things we're learning are to create a civilization which is based on the principle of spirituality as compared or contrasted with the principle of materialism. So if I'm a soul, not a body, I have a body, I am a soul, that's a principle of spirituality. That means I will give full attention to the soul as what I am, as who I am, and then I will express myself as an actor in this world drama through this body, through various different situations. And I will create my life along those lines, along with my friends and community and all of this. So it's really not prescriptive. This is not military. Even if you see across the board the different religions, you see that it's also not prescriptive there. Sometimes in seminaries and trainings and so on, they will say, you know, everybody has to do like this, and that will go on for a number of years or 3 or 4 years or whatever. A point comes when you're on your own. Is this you and the divine, and you have to figure it out. So I think what you can say about Raj Yoga is that you're on your own. It's very nice to have a community around which is supportive, but you and your practice, that's, you're on your own. So you have to be strong to be able to be on your own. That is true.
Okay, on that rather pregnant note, we will have to end today's talk, and we thank you, Sister Denise, for sharing your views on whether the Brahma Kumaris is a cult and how it's defined. And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You can join the Brahma Kumaris if you want to. You don't if you don't want to, and you can choose what you want to follow once you join the institution. So for those of you who had questions as to whether the Brahma Kumaris is a cult or not, I hope your questions have been answered, and we look forward to seeing you for the next segment. Thank you, Sister Denise.
Thank you.